Welcome to another episode of the Record of Lodoss War OVA Rewatch Podcast. My name is Alan.
And my name is Kate. We run ReverseThieves.com. That's where you can find all of our other podcasts as well as blog posts every week.
And if you have any comments about the podcast or your memories of Lodoss War, you can contact us on Twitter. My name is HisuiRT.
I'm NarutakiRT, and we also have ReverseThieves on Twitter.
And if you just want to send us an email or maybe an audio file that we can play, you can send it to ReverseThieves@gmail.com. Welcome to Lodoss Island. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss the plot of the episode.
This is episode number 13, Lodoss, the Burning Continent, and this is the final episode of the Record of Lodoss War OVA. It's a very action-packed episode, as you might imagine. You know, Parn and Wagnard and Ashram all coming together and confronting each other in a very dramatic battle as Wagnard is trying to sacrifice Deedlit on this altar of Cardis and trying to revive the Dark God. At the same time, there's a dragon battle and just dragons are finally everywhere. The promise of the previous episodes come to full fruition.
And yeah, these are all the big Mamma Jamma ancient dragons, not the little dragon other than Shooting Star that we've seen so far. The big dragon versus dragon fight.
And at first, Wagnard, you know, is taking on both Parn and Ashram, and they sort of form like a little bit of an alliance to try to take him out. But I know you guys are going to be shocked. Parn makes a foolish run at him that actually works for once because it distracts Wagnard, and Ashram is like able to get behind him, and he slices him almost completely in half.
Wagnard makes a whole big deal about, I have like infinite regeneration thanks to Cardis. I'll never, right, magic sword.
Also, Cardis doesn't give a shit about my life and is actually going to use me. Any sacrifice is fine, so this can be the life that I use in order to be revived. And Parn is, at this point, now trying to desperately get to Deedlit because she's, like, unconscious on this altar. The structure is crumbling around them. It's very dramatic. You know, the ground is falling away. Ashram that gets in Parn's way, and then we sort of like cut to Carla and Wart. I don't even remember what they were doing.
Basically, Wart is pissing Carla for this plan is insane because if Cardis is reborn, she'll have balance, but because everybody on the damn island is dead. And he's like, your plans are foolish enough as it is, but this is like a crazy gamble. And she's like, I'm a gambler who is willing to take these risks.
And then we come back and Ashram is like, look, I know that this place is crumbling, but we still have to have our duel, Parn. So let's have that happen now. And Ashram, of course, beats Parn because I don't know why there's a rivalry here. There's no scenario in which Parn is the better swordsman. That just isn't a thing.
My level 5 can beat his level 15.
It's just absurd. Wagnard then does a super, like, zombie horror movie move. So Ashram feels victorious, and then he, like, gets his ankle grabbed from the ground, and Ashram is, like, pulled downwards as Wagnard is, like, fully possessed by the spirit of Cardis and no longer can really be stabbed. The power is so great.
They have a final death struggle, which kills both of them, thereby finally getting rid of Wagnard.
Don't forget, he destroys the scepter in the process of this, right?
Well, yeah. It kills Wagnard, finally, and it kills Ashram. And then, when they're both dead, Wagnard wakes up one more time and is like, yes, but from hell's heart I spit at you! And then he destroys the scepter so they can't just, like, simply stop the ceremony. It's now just, like, on autopilot.
And then Parn dual wields, so now he has Ashram's sword and King Fawn's sword. Parn gets to do what he has always wanted to do in this whole series over and over again. He gets to stab magic, and it actually works. It works for once. And then we also have the dragons who are fighting in the skies while all this is sort of going on.
And, like, the good dragon summons his good dragon buddy and the evil dragon summons his evil dragon buddy. Although I don't remember them actually doing anything. They're just like, me, 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 telepathy each other.
I think there's some lightning. I feel like there is,
like, they cast spells at a distance.
Something. And then Parn, of course, he rescues Deedlit. He's destroyed magic with his sword. And Nip Slip, there's for some reason, I always remember that. They have so carefully crafted every episode where they have never done this, and it's an OVA, and they were like, look, it's the last one. Can we just have, like, a one?
We gotta make sure people watch to the end, so.
One!
Everybody will tell their friends, no, you gotta buy the last disc. It's got Needless Boobies.
And Triumph reigns. They save the world. The island is not destroyed. And they are, you know, honored back at the city gates. And there's a big ceremony and everybody's so happy and everything. We go from very dark to very bright, beautiful sun. And Parn is offered the thing that he seemingly wanted so much from the beginning, which is to become a holy knight. But he does not do that. Instead, he decides to wander Lodos with Deedlit. And I think the final scene is Gim's grave, right?
Yeah. Other than the scene with them running through the opening.
Riding on horseback through the opening.
Yeah. And it is worth noting that Parn gives up both the holy sword and the demonic sword, and he gets his dad's old sword back.
And,
like, slain and
Etto. I was about to say, like, what was everybody else doing?
They basically watch Deedlit and Parn ride off, and they're like, ah, surely we will all meet up again whenever Lodos is in trouble again. But for now, we should let them, you know, go on their adventures.
Leveling up. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss player and character growth.
I guess the big character moment in here, right, is that Parn, he makes a decision at the end to not pursue this path that, as a very young new novice, that he really thought that he wanted.
He thought that he was stuck in this Podak town, that he was never going to go anywhere, that the only way he could ever be anybody important was to essentially claim the legacy that his father lost, becoming a holy knight, becoming this respected warrior. And I guess in the end he realized that isn't important. What is important is doing good deeds and being with your sexy elf girlfriend.
He does become a warrior of renown. I think that in the context of what we've seen, they will write stories and bards will sing tales about the adventures of Parn and Deedlit and Slain and everyone. He decides that he doesn't have to become an institutionalized warrior, I guess. And I feel like that's a really mature decision.
Look, Kate, dual-wielding magical swords does that to a person.
I'm gonna have to try it sometime. Hashtag adulting. I feel like it almost reminds me of a scene about halfway through, I think, where Woodchuck is talking to Parn and Deedlit on the roof before the war happens, and sort of his, you know, kind of cynicism about, you know, right, that this is just like a kind of stupid thing that you're going to go get yourself killed for no reason, and kind of the cycle of war. And then, of course, then Parn experiences war for the first time and, like, sees that as being so horrific. So I feel like that probably informs this final, and being going through such a traumatic thing. I mean, I don't think it implies that now he's going to go off and be a monk or be a pacifist, but
well, one would assume, hopefully, that they haven't totally forgotten Woodchuck and maybe are looking a way to help him out, because they know that he's basically under the thrall of Carla. At least they have some idea of how to deal with Carla now. So she might just end up possessing a different person, but at least they'd have their old buddy Woodchuck back. Or at least it would free him from being the meat puppet of an ancient sorceress.
Speaking of that, I guess, did Wagnard have a character development because he became fully possessed by Cardus?
I think that it was the inevitable conclusion of his character, despite everybody being like, you know, you're not going to get any kind of great reward. You're just going to be another victim of Cardus, and Wagnard has none of that, even till the very end.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think even till the end that he has any real grand motivations. Right? He's just like, I will be a powerful wizard. I mean, I guess that's an ambition.
It's just lame.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I just don't feel as though he had a real plan.
First I get the magical power, then I get the women. I don't know. I will say, it is an interesting, like, refusal to change with Ashram, because Parn does make the good point that, like, why are we still fighting? We can fight afterwards, but if we don't stop Cardus now, it doesn't matter who wins this duel. Whoever lives through this duel, if either of us lives through this duel, we'll lose. But Ashram is so, I assume, like, cursed by the darkness of the sword and how it must always fight the light sword, and just his dedication to Beld and his dedication to this rivalry. He must fight Parn. Plus, I guess you just figured, like, what, it's going to take like 5-6 minutes tops.
I mean, it's going to be over before you know it.
Then I stop the ceremony and then I go home. He had several, basically, crosswords where he could have avoided this path. And it seemed like when he teamed up with Parn, maybe that was going to happen. But in the end, he stuck to his original plan, which eventually just led to his downfall.
Sword World Supplements. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss fantasy and RPG tropes and elements.
And we've mentioned it before, but I think it's important to note that this is the inevitable conclusion of when you have two swords that are opposed to each other. You have to have the final fight between the two of them. It even transcends the big Wagnard fight. So I feel that is this rivalry is centuries old. Whoever possesses these swords will probably fight for eternity. I think that's a classic. Light and dark always fighting. Even Slain mentions that they've won today, but the battle of light and dark will continue. So, almost in microcosm with those two swords.
I think one of the tropes that was in here that I don't think is a positive trope is the damsel in distress. You know, I think Deedlit is, I don't know if she has a single line in this final episode. Does she speak at the end?
Yeah.
She maybe has like a sentence.
So she speaks a little bit at the very end when they're going off. And I think she says like, Parn! Once or twice while she's on the altar.
No, she's on. In a fevered state, yeah. Or whatever. Yeah, that doesn't count.
That is hardly full of agency.
Obviously, this story has a lot of fantasy tropes and is playing with a lot of them. But I did feel like Deedlit is not generally in the story to be, like, a person that must be rescued consistently. So it's kind of disappointing, I think, that her final role is really as an unconscious woman.
I do wonder, that seems like something that was probably not in the original novels. If for nothing else, you tend not to do that to one of the player characters. That's generally, like, if it was just some random princess that was going to be sacrificed, that seems more in line, because at that point, sexist trope or not, at least you're not taking agency away from one of the PCs, which is kind of the ultimate insult when you're playing a tabletop game. I mean, there's some instances where it happens, you know, bad decisions by player characters and stuff, but this seems like a very conscious decision to knock Deedlit out of the story for a while. Wasn't through any bad decisions by any of the player characters. Basically, Wagnard jumped out of nowhere and forced them.
Look, Deedlit's player rolled all ones. The DM had no choice.
Or at least find some way to wake her up and have her fight in the last.
Fighting from her own side in some way, yeah. Even if, like, she's imprisoned or something.
But this strikes me as an anime original. I mean, we can find out and read the book and, oh, man, I guess she was out of the plot the whole time.
Her player had to work late a lot that week.
Like, she's like, oh, my boss is, like, crazy. Have me kidnapped. And hopefully by the time you resolve all this, I'll be able to play again.
Yeah, I really want to know what this story is like in the book. But, I mean, I think that one really stuck out to me in here.
We didn't talk about it too much in the summary, but I do feel that the battle is turning in Kashu and the human side's forces. They're winning. And then, I don't think it's explained if it's either Wagnard or one of the evil dragons, but somebody basically casts a spell that zombifies all the dead orcs and goblins and kobolds, and then they rise up again, and the human forces have to now, even though their forces are greatly depleted, take on the same army again, now resurrected. And so you see Orsin and Shiris and Kashu and his second lieutenant guy who's always around him, and they're like, if we're all still alive, that means Karnas hasn't fully resurrected, that means Parn's still alive, thereby we've got to buy him all the time we can. And so they go in there, start continuing to fight to give them enough time. But I feel like that you think that the battle's won, but then the undead come up and bolster the weakened army. I feel like that's a pretty big fantasy trope.
I don't even know if we've actually said this because it's so obvious, but I just want to say it here at the end. The whole plot that my plot is to awaken the dark god of this island, you know, that's so classic villain sort of plotting. So I don't know if we brought that up when it first came up or
not. I don't
think
we did.
But it strikes me here as like, oh, that's just, somebody needs a default motivation for whatever they're doing.
And I do feel like a classic way to end this story is for the hero to be given this, like, grand but kind of fixed position, but then turning it down to travel the world and be a free adventurer. I feel like for Parn, this has an added element. It's not like he was like a wand, you know, some kind of like Conan-style wanderer before this point, and like turned down a position, but you know, I'm always the free as the wind. Why would I take it even if there's like a gorgeous princess that I can marry or the such? So it's actually, like Kate said, a big growth of character that Parn takes it down. But I do feel like offering the hero a fixed position, but him going off to right other wrongs and see other lands is kind of a classic of the tale.
Revelations from Cardus. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss our favorite parts and final thoughts.
But I do like how Ashram just teleports behind Wagnard, because for some reason Wagnard hates Ashram. I guess because they had a bad working relationship. He's like, man, I had to work with you and pretend to, like, not hate you as much as I did when we had the same boss. But now that I'm in charge with the evil powers of Cardus, I'm going to kill you first, Ashram. Then I'll kill this random kid that I guess I don't like. Hey, he has a holy sword. He might actually do something. So I'll kill him second. And then Parn goes in and blocks the killing blow on Ashram. Ashram and Wagnard have, like, all this, I'll stop you and get back Deedlit. And he's like, no, her immortal energy shall feed our dark god and bring on a new age and all this stuff. And they're going back and forth. And then Ashram just appears behind him. And once again, all I can think is the famous Cold Steel line, nothing personal, kid. And then he chops him in half. I think everybody could agree that's a cool scene.
It was a cool scene. I think one part I wanted to point out is actually the very beginning. I think it's the first scene of this episode is Parn running and he's battling these spirits. And the animation is really nice in that scene. And overall, I think the animation, I mean, the dragon animation is still like stills being moved around for the most part,
and
but...
for some reason, I noticed that the fire animation in certain scenes was really good, and then other times it was super cheap CG fire. It was like, they only had the, like, cool fire guy around for, like, he can only
CG?
Do... Oh, yeah. There was some cheap CG fire.
Oh, man. I didn't even notice that.
Like, one of the, like, what, it happens, I think, especially when, like, the two dragons are, like, telepathically communicating with their other corresponding good and evil dragon buddies. Like, one of the dragons has this really cheap CG flame. It's really short. So I guess they didn't feel like bringing on, like, the good fire guy for it.
Because, yeah, there's some really good explosions and fire in here where it's that really lushly drawn 80s, 90s hand-drawn stuff. So
yeah, it's not all of it, but I just remember, in particular, it's very short. So I guess they didn't want to go all out. But it was like,
Anything that wasn't the main cast was very... Look,
jank.
Yeah. Like, so it was still a mixed bag even here at the end.
Like, Shiris, I think, once again, is sometimes, like, better drawn in certain shots than others.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes you're like, who is that?
Hey, Orson, who's that random redheaded girl in the army? Oh, it's Shiris, I see.
Oh, speaking of him, though, he speaks more in this episode than I think he has spoken the entire time that we have met him. I think he spoke more at the, like, in one scene in here. And he was very eloquent. He was great. So I was like, you should have been here more.
He's like, I shall ruminate on war.
Okay, not that eloquent. We have to answer the big question here, which was, how was this as a finale to everything that we have seen? Was it satisfying?
So, I think that overall, it did feel a little rushed. Because I felt like you could tell them defeating Carla and getting back the priestess. And, you know, you had a big emotional death. You still had plot hooks around. But it felt pretty conclusive. But it had an appropriate level of build-up. I felt like this... felt pretty satisfying, but everything seemed to happen really quickly, so I don't feel it had the same amount of impact of resolution. Maybe if the second half had been as long as the first half, I would have felt as much. So overall, the end point feels satisfactory. I just feel like the arc to get there does feel very story told in double time.
I definitely see what you're saying, Al. I think it could have used a couple more episodes to do it. I do think, though, that the beginning of this story I thought was pretty good. Mm-hmm. Because I thought that the shooting star stuff was good. The conflict in the cave of Ashram versus the party of Parnes. I thought that whole kind of... And then trying to get the scepter. I thought that, like, all kind of came together pretty well. But yeah, I think the episodes of Wagner kidnapping Deedlit and coming up with this plan of, like, how this was all going to fall out. Yeah, I think if... It almost needed just one episode in between, probably.
Well, and it would have given Ashram a little more time off screen, so it would be a lot more surprising when he came back.
Yes, I was thinking the same thing.
Because, yeah, if it had been, like, maybe two or three episodes, maybe have, like, maybe a another kidnapping attempt and or some kind of trap to lure in Deedlit and Parn so that Wagner can steal him, not he just teleports and throws down lightning bolts. Because, yeah, I feel like Ashram being out of the picture for a while, his return, like, I'm still alive, would have been a lot more shocking. Once again, it gives me more of a feeling that they maybe had originally planned this to be a little longer.
But I do agree with you, too, that the very end point feels very satisfying. They prevent this dark being from being resurrected, ticker tape parade, and... then Parn and Deedlit sort of going off to another adventure. I feel like that all felt pretty good. And maybe it's just also because, like I talked about in the trope section, I wasn't really crazy about this being the final story of, like, all right, and now Deedlit is not even present for this. So first arc is stronger.
Although I will now mention, now that I think about it, it is very fitting for this OVA as opposed to the original books that it's just Parn and Dietlet that go out on adventures, and basically like all the other party is, we're just gonna stay here in the castle and hang out, and maybe if they need us again, we'll join up.
Or they're dead, or they're possessed.
In the book, I have a much more feeling that like Eto and Slane and Lelia would be out there going with Parn and Dietlet to this next adventure, whereas here they're all just like, well, there go the actual important characters onto other adventures. We're just gonna stay home and read.
And, I mean, yeah, that's true. The whole OVA, really, the second half of it treats everybody like they don't really factor in that much. So, yeah, I think that's pretty far from what a D&D campaign would look like, so.
And we didn't even see those the Eto and Slane fights resolved. It's just like, ah, they did okay.
They were fine. Everybody's fine. You see, they're here at the castle celebrating. Everybody's fine. Dragons. Well, I think the dragons resolved.
Mm-hmm. They were main party members at one point, Kate. Main party members.
The dragons?
No, Slane.
It's like, man, what? That's the chapter I missed.
Yeah, no, they were hanging out, having adventures.
That sounds great.
Making stealth checks.
Okay, so this isn't quite our final episode talking about Lodos. We are going to wrap up with one more episode of the podcast to gather all our thoughts about the series, you know, as a whole, and kind of look back on our memories of it and what we now feel about it, rewatching it and that sort of thing. So that will be a bonus episode.
Yeah, because I feel like we have a lot of new perspective, just being older anime fans, having a bunch of distance from it, this kind of being like a little spiffed up version, and just having read the novels, I think all are many contributing factors to maybe change, or at least change the way we look at the series.
But for now, I just want to say thank you so much for listening to this rewatch, and I hope that you watched along, or, you know, if you didn't, like, that we have really enhanced your view of Lodos in some way. Yeah, thanks a lot.